Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 79 for October 17th, 2008. He's a biter. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by GoToMyPC, wherever you go, access your PC and all your files, programs, and email remotely with GoToMyPC. For a free trial of this award-winning service, visit GoToMyPC.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, episode 79 of the show, in which we cover all things Microsoft. We really should call it Microsoft Weekly. Mr. Paul Thurrott is our host from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's also news editor for Windows IT Pro and the author of the brand new Windows Vista Secrets from Wiley & Sons. Hey, and also he's in a little pain. Did you at least win the game?
We won most of the games, yeah.
Oh, good.
Now, you know what I did? We went to Springfield last weekend, and they have the Basketball Hall of Fame there.
Yeah.
So I used to be able to dunk a basketball, but as I've gotten older and had knee surgery and gained weight, I can't dunk a basketball anymore. But I can dunk a basketball in a 9-foot rim, I discovered on Saturday, and proceeded to throw my back out doing it.
Oh.
So I've been kind of in pain since then, but then last night I did play basketball.
Good for you.
Regular basketball.
But now you're in pain.
And now I'm in pain.
Oh, just, you know. Us old guys, I shouldn't include you because you're really a lot younger than me, but
I don't know. My legs sound like popcorn when I go up the stairs, you know?
That's it. The knees are the first to go. Then the back. Yeah. And then the mind. And then you don't care.
In that order.
Yeah. And then you no longer care. So today, a lot to talk about. We've got another giveaway. How did the giveaway go on Sunday?
It was great. It was punishing. We had 700 and, if I remember, 37 people.
Oh, that's great.
It's great, unless you're the guy that has to go through it all. You know, so I gave away 10 copies from that. And then we did one on Twitter yesterday. And actually, just as you rang me, I was trying to get through that. I'm still not done. I haven't picked the 10 winners yet, but I'll do that when we get off, I guess.
All right.
And then Sunday, we're going to do a third. I keep saying we, like there are other people involved. So Sunday, I'm going to do another one, 10 more books. This one will be on the Supersite for Windows.
Excellent.
And if you go to winsupersite.com/book, there's a page up there for the book. And sometime by Saturday, I suppose, I will put a note in there about the time block, you know, that you should write in for that one, and it will work the way the other ones have worked, where there's a 15-minute window.
This is fun. I like this.
It's fun. You know, it's like everything else I do. You know, when I do the everything must go stuff, you know, I get a lot of responses. I also get people who are trying to, you know, work outside the system a little bit, which I don't appreciate.
They try to game it?
Yeah, you know, it's, but
how would you game something like this?
Well, they'll either just send me an email and say, here's my sob story. And I really need a book. And
I got to have a book. I'm out of work. I can't afford it.
No, I'm not complaining. I understand. I can't, you know, I have to stick to that little block of time and just work with what's in there. I can't really go over the other ones. And I can't answer all these emails now. So now we're up to about 1,000 emails over the two events, you know, so it's just kind of, my inbox went from 13 unread messages to, what does it say, 968. So great. Good for me, you know, so I'll get through it. It's okay.
Well done. Bravo. It's a huge success. This was a triumph.
These are all sales that are never going to happen now. I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah. Wiley and Sons. Those author copies are not listeners.
They've been very generous with the books. They've sent me huge boxes of these things. The UPS guy's loving me.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, those are heavy. The third
shipment, he said, okay, what's going on?
What is this? Are you importing bricks from China? What's going on?
Exactly. We're doing the
fireplace.
The driveway over one brick at a time. They're from Italy. They're beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, Apple released its new notebooks. I know this is a Windows show, but notebook you bought was a Mac notebook for running Vista.
That's true.
And I, of course, being the fanboy that I am, immediately ran out and bought the new MacBook Pro. I really like it. I was a little concerned about the new trackpad, but it's very intuitive. In fact, you can use it the same way as, not that anybody listening cares. Maybe I'll just stop and shut up and save it for Mac Break Weekly.
I was going to.
I'll save it. Oh. Okay. Never mind. They did get a lot of attention, though. Isn't it interesting?
I know, and I have to say I resent that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, it's...
That's ridiculous. As I wrote in, I think, Short Takes last week, you know, imagine if Dell sent out announcements to the press and said, next Tuesday, we're going to announce our new line of Inspiron laptops. You know, imagine what the response would be. It would be nothing. Despite the fact that, you know, these things serve a much huger demographic than Apple's laptops, and in many ways are actually more innovative in ways that count to the end user. You know, you mentioned to me before this thing started that it's, you know, solid and not flexible, but I don't recall that, you know, flex being a huge problem with the previous MacBook. So.
No, it wasn't. It's just they did this milling it out of a big thick piece of aluminum, and it really feels that way. Let's face it. I think it's really clear. It's a premium priced product for the BMW set. It is.
Yes,
it's not a you know, middle of the road laptop. It's the ultimate driving machine kind of thing.
That's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine.
I think Apple's happy with that.
They are. But you know, the other thing they do is spend 20 minutes up front talking about numbers that mean nothing. You know,
well, they did that with that 17% of the market thing was a little phony because they talk about.
Well, but what's beautiful about that, and this, and credit to Apple for being able to push this one by people who should know better. You read stories the next day in the paper. Apple now controls 17% of the market. The market for what? What are you talking about? They don't even qualify it.
Yeah, they really should qualify it. First of all, they're
53% of another market. Yeah. It must be an important one.
In Portugal, they're
really?
Huge.
I just
that number was the little fine print of whole systems, not, you know, because a lot of PC people just buy new CPUs because they already got the monitors. And it was, and it probably was just last quarter. There's certainly not of the total universe in the U.S. They're I'm sure well under double digits, but they're selling better than they ever have.
Absolutely,
can't deny that.
No, I would never deny that. But I guess my point is, you can just tell the story without exaggerating it. Not you, I mean, can just tell the story.
Of course, they could, but they're selling.
No, but Apple always gets a pass like this.
Oh, you're for saying example, that the press should tell the story.
Always,
yeah, I agree.
Get a pass like this. So, for example, let me see when this was dated. I just looked this up. October 7th, there was a story in, let's see where it is. I think it was just like an Associated Press story. But it, basically, what it said was, iPhone 3G has captured 17% of the market for cell phones. No, they didn't. They didn't capture 17% of the market for, you know, cell phones in the U.S. They didn't even capture 17% of the market for smartphones in the U.S. Because the figure that they're using, this is how they described it. The figures are targeted at typical sales and don't include corporate sales that often favor BlackBerries and Windows mobile devices.
We're going to leave out the other ones.
Well, we're going to leave out the ones that actually make up the majority of that market. Like the typical sales? What does that mean? Typical when you want to exclude the people who actually are beating you in the market. Yes.
Now, would you that this is mainstream media. Do you think trade press falls for this also?
I know they do.
They should be smart. They are the ones who should be smarter.
Well, if you...
I mean, the mainstream media says stupid things about technology all the time.
No, I put this... If you're CNET or...
you should know better.
Well, who else? No, actually...
PC Magazine.
No. That's your market. It's okay to talk about this stuff. Those are the people that should be doing this. So, in other words, if CNET a week ahead of time said, and I'm sure they did, hey, Apple's going to release new laptops the next Tuesday. We're going to write all about it. Stay here for our live blog event. You know, yeah, that's fine. That's the tech market. But when the Wall Street Journal writes an article about it and the New York Times John Markoff, by the way, from the New York Times, wrote an article that Apple was going to announce new laptops in a few days. What? Really? That's the best use of that guy's time, is it really?
Well,
fascinating. Well, no. And you know, if you're an Apple guy, congratulations, because you've won the mindshare battle.
You sound a little bit like a bitter Windows guy who's just jealous.
I don't. Oh, no, I'm not jealous. I think it's. I just look at it more generally, and it's just out of proportion. It just doesn't make sense. That's all.
It makes sense because that's what their readership, or they think their readership, is interested in. I mean, their readership is going to snooze if they announce a little Lenovo notebook.
There's a gold star next to the word Apple. If they do anything, we got to write about it because that will drive drives.
I think that's what they're responding to. It drives readership.
Yeah, it's just disgusting. There are better computers for a lot of people out there. They just are.
Of course, there are. Of course. Now, Microsoft even is a little sensitive. What was this? Apple tax. I actually
ignored this story for one day because I wanted to sit back and really think about it. And I wanted to watch what I knew would be the overreaction of this story in the media, which is exactly what happened, which was that Apple actually sent out an email to certain people, I guess, and said, hey, by the way, Apple's going to release some new laptops today, but we just want you to know that there are hidden costs associated with everything that Apple does. We call it the Apple tax. And here's a bunch of charts and figures showing what we mean.
This is starting to sound like McCain Obama, I got to say. hidden tax.
Right. So on the negative side, I guess I would say this is pretty transparent, right?
Yeah,
But that could be said of like the Switcher ads too, right? They're pretty transparent. You get what they're trying to do. Okay, fine. I mean, they're competing. That's their job. They're a corporation. They have competitors. It's okay. Fair enough. I would say from my own standpoint, I've complained a lot in the past about how they don't address Apple specifically face to face often enough.
This time.
And here they are finally showing up for the fight. I sort of like the aggressive stance here because I have to be honest. I mean, looking over with their rationale for this, I actually agree with it. This is true. And it's not just, I think people looked at this and said, Microsoft is afraid that people are going to switch to the Mac. So they're throwing out this FUD, to prevent them from doing so. Okay. Fair enough. But, the truth is, when you switch platforms of any kind, there's a cost. You don't just go to the Mac and then run your old applications. It doesn't work like that. And if you're going to tell me that you can install Windows and, in fact, run those applications, you're right. But, then you would have to pay for that copy of Windows because it doesn't come with the Mac.
Right.
There is a cost just on the application side. Apple hardware basically plays in a more expensive segment of the market. People have debated our Macs expensive.
There's a cost for switching, and I always mention that cost when people call me on the radio show. But if you're starting from scratch, there's not a cost. I mean, Apple comes bundled with a lot of software that Windows does not come bundled with.
Yes. Well, like what? What do you mean?
iTunes, iPhoto, iDVD.
Okay, so iMovie. iLife. Yeah.
That's a pretty good package for a lot of people.
That's a pretty good package. That's true. But that stuff's all available for free, basically, on the Windows side. So I'm not really sure what the difference is.
iPhoto is not. iMovie is not.
Not the exact applications. I mean, applications.
Well, compare Windows Movie Maker to iMovie. Come on.
Actually,
I think it compares favorably?
That.
Really?
More than favorably. I wrote an article about that a couple of years ago.
Really?
Absolutely.
Ooh, I wouldn't use Windows Movie Maker if you paid me.
You might want to look at it again because it's really not that bad.
Has it gotten better?
I mean that seriously.
It's not that bad. I'm glad to hear it.
No.
That's a stunning recommendation.
No, it's better than... Let me be clear. It's better than iMovie.
Really?
It really is.
Okay. I'll give it another look.
There's nothing like iDVD on the Windows side. There's nothing like GarageBand.
There is, but they're not free. I mean, there's GarageBand's based on Acid, which is a Windows application.
Sure. And most of the people who use it are on Acid because...
I think the iLife package, if you're going to say starting from scratch, I think it's very true there's an Apple tax if you're already a Windows user.
I guess what I'm saying is media players, digital media applications, that stuff's out there. Right? That's fine. I'm talking more about things like Microsoft Office, Photoshop, whatever it is. I mean, starting from scratch is a cute term, but who's starting from scratch? Did somebody wake up on their 37th birthday and said, wow, I better
embrace this
PC thing?
I'll give you an example. Yeah. Same cost to upgrade to the new Photoshop on the Windows side as it is on the Mac side, and the cross grade is the same cost. So there is, in fact, if you're planning to upgrade to Photoshop, there's no cost. Yeah. If you have to use Microsoft Office, there's a cost, but Apple has a $79 Office, and Google has a free Office. And Open Office is free. So,
yeah.
There's an Apple tax, and in a way, I think it's disingenuous of Microsoft to say this, because what they're really saying is if you do it our way and you use Microsoft Office, it's going to cost you more money. Well, yeah.
No. I think the people have fixated a little too much on the cost of switching, because that's not really what it's about.
Oh, okay.
It's not just the cost of switching. They're not just trying to prevent people from going from Windows to the Mac. You know, Mac products themselves, the hardware is also more expensive right up front.
Yeah.
You know, even these new MacBooks are a typical example. Yeah. You can go pick up the Best Buy circular from last Sunday, pick out any one of a dozen of laptops that cost $500 or a little bit less, and then compare them to the $1,299 MacBook or the whatever.
Yes,
the
I agree with you on that
version. You know,
I'm saying. It's the BMW. People who buy an Apple are looking for a premium product.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying as well. Which is, if you're telling me that I don't mind paying more for something that I get a perceived value out of, that I perceive the quality from this thing, that's absolutely fine.
Well, we could argue about the perceived value of OS X versus Vista. I don't know if that's perceived.
It doesn't matter. I mean, in other words, if you have made this decision and that's what you believe, that is a valid reason to use the thing. It's fine. Don't try to tell me they're as inexpensive, because they're not. And I don't mean that to you directly. I mean, just in general, because I do get emails. Well, you know, don't make the argument that it's the same, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a tough argument to make. I'd agree with you on that.
And it's not just that the cost. It's just the features that you just don't get on the Mac side. You know, the Apple, or rather Microsoft, pointed out that the only really hugely upgradable Mac is that Tower system. It starts at $27.99. You know, as far as internal components go. Whereas you can buy very cheap Mac PC towers, you know, that are upgradable, you know, in much the same fashion.
I would say, yes, that's true. And I would say that most of the Apple audience couldn't care less. They don't plan to upgrade. And I bet you a lot of Windows people who think they're going to upgrade don't upgrade either.
I would put that a slightly different way, which is that most of the Apple people are all too happy to accept what Apple gives them and don't offer up a lot of criticism for features that they could really use, like media card readers in a laptop, or built-in 3G network, or fingerprint readers for logging in, TV tuners, you know, HDMI. I mean, it goes on and on and on. There's all this stuff that does come on PCs, you know.
Well, I think what you're seeing
actually very convenient.
I think what you're seeing there, and I absolutely will grant you this, is that there's only one company that makes Apples. So what they make, their SKUs, that's what you can get and nothing else.
Yep.
There are many different SKUs for PCs. There are many, many companies that make it. So if a company wants to put HDMI on, they can. It's not on all laptops.
Well, you know what? It's actually a little more limited than that, because it's not just that there's one company making Mac hardware. It's really kind of one guy's vision. And right now, you know, if you're in that sort of less is more aesthetic that Steve Jobs is really into, you know, where I don't want a lot of buttons on this thing, and I don't want a lot of holes and ports and things you can pull out and all that stuff. You know, you get a certain type of product. And yes, there's a certain group of people, a segment of the population, that will always love that kind of stuff and put up with the fact that it's, you know, you have to plug in things and do all that extra stuff.
Well, they might argue that they're not putting up with anything, but
of course they would. But that's, I think.
Well, for instance, I did want a media card reader on the new MacBook.
Yeah.
So I bought a $30 Belkin card bus card that goes in there and it has a media reader. And it's flush. It's built in. But, I mean, you're right. You have to buy extra things.
Yeah, but now you can't have your 3G card in there at the same time. I mean, you're taking up the one slot that you have, and you don't get those on the MacBook unless they change something on the
MacBook. No, that's true. Yeah, I use a USB 3G card. But the other side of that, and that's probably because I use a Mac. But, well, no, I recommend them anyway, because it's nice to be able to move it from computer to computer.
It is nice. Sure. We could talk about individual components. I'm just saying, you know, any general purpose PC company, Dell, HP, whoever they are, is going to offer this range of, you know, system types. They have different models and makes all kinds
Apple
of options.
No, nope.
Apple doesn't do that. And it wouldn't surprise me when Steve Jobs retires at some point that, you know, that might be one of those things that they will change, because that's really his sort of guiding vision. And I know that, like I said, there's a lot of people who really rally around that.
I have to say, simple SKUs are not a bad thing. You've criticized Windows for having too many SKUs.
Absolutely. It's like when you go in a supermarket and there are 37 different kinds of Italian
21.
Dressing. What is this?
I think Steve understands the market segment he's aimed at. He's not aimed at the broad segment that Windows is. Windows is aimed at a much larger market segment.
It's Whole Foods versus Safeway.
It is. And I mean, as a Whole Foods person, I'm content with it. But it isn't for everybody. I'd absolutely agree with you. It's not inappropriate for Microsoft to point at that fact out.
Right.
But I think in some ways it comes off a little bit, looking a little bit churlish, a little bit.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
How can you, as a Mac guy, how can you even say something like that?
It is churlish. You probably
cheered those Switcher ads when they first appeared. Of course you do. But that's not churlish.
But they're done with humor and they're done funny. It's not churlish. It's not on. Churlish. It's an effect. It's a much churlish. More. They're much more effective when Microsoft comes out with a press release that says Apple tax three or four times. That comes to me. Now maybe I'm alone. It comes across as insecure. They're worried, yep. Right? It comes across. Look at, they're number one. What are they worried about? This little company.
Wait, hold on. You got to stop. Hold on. Let's back up. They're worried. They're insecure.
Yeah, well, and churlish.
Why? But okay, and churlish. Okay, fair enough.
Those three.
Microsoft, insecure, churlish, and worried since 1995.
I'm not saying that they are, oh, but no. it comes off that way.
But I don't understand why that's any different from when Apple comes out with a Switcher ad. And maybe, what are they nervous about? Why are they being so churlish?
Because they are number two.
I see.
Or
so
three
it's okay
or four. Yeah, it always is. That's why monopolistic behavior is bad in a monopoly, not monopoly.
But that doesn't apply to everything, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
I would just say that, you know, obviously when you're not the number one player, you're trying to get there. But when you are the number one player, you're trying to stay there.
Yeah,
you know, and
I guess that's the big change because Microsoft never had to worry about that before.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, you know. If you look at markets where Microsoft is not number one, like the Xbox 360 or the Zune especially, you know, their approach to these things is not all that dissimilar to their approach to other things, you know. And I have to say, I actually kind of disagree with that, you know. I think I've always felt that they should be more aggressive, and here they are being more aggressive, and I have to say, you know, I think it's okay. It's just like politics, you know, and some of the negative stuff you see on TV between McCain and Obama right now. I don't mind aggressive as long as it's true.
Yeah.
And as long as you can back it up.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And I'm agreeing with you on those points. I'm saying that perhaps in appearances, it's not as effective. You know, if they did a Zune Switcher ad, I think that would be very funny and sure. very sharp of them to do.
I see.
Don't you think? Because they're number two. Here's all the reasons that you should be switching.
I'm pretty sure they're not. I don't think they're number two, but okay.
Okay, number four, whatever they are.
They're certainly a number.
They're not. They're in the top ten, I'm sure.
They're in, yeah.
But that would be, then it doesn't look so. Then it's like scrappy. We're the scrappy underdogs.
All right. Well, you know what? If they had done nothing for more time and we were sitting here today talking about how they're still not doing anything to fight back against Apple, that would be much worse.
Wanted them to do this for a long time. You know, I know that. Yeah.
Well, you got to cue the montage, get the fight going.
But was the press response to that? To me, it looked like they were kind of mocking Apple tax, Apple tax, Apple tax. It was like developers. It was a little heavy handed.
Microsoft can't win.
Well, that's
true. We know that.
Yeah,
right.
Because we all hate them. Yeah.
Everyone hates
them. We in the press. Yeah.
But that's why I said I sat on this one for a day. I wanted to. Yes, we in the press. There's some truth to that. I mean, you know, and I don't know if it's an American thing or just they're the dominant force in the industry. So there's a natural resentment and a natural suspicion of everything they do. And they're looked at in a certain way. You know, like I said, you know, Apple releases new laptops. It's like, let's have a parade in Times Square. You know, we won something, you know. I mean, that's what it's like, you know, in Apple, you know, Microsoft comes back and says, you know, these things are really expensive. Oh, you're a jerk.
No. It wasn't what they said. You know? It was how they said it. I just thought that there would have been perhaps a less tone deaf way to say it.
There's no, there is no way on the Apple side to say it's how they say it to anything Microsoft does at this point. Give me a break.
No, Apple says Apple, stuff with Apple, style and Apple. Panache.
Oh,
you don't think they have panache? You don't think John Hodgman is funny?
Wow.
Does it hurt your feelings? I think it hurts your feelings.
Does what hurt my feelings?
The Switcher ads.
No, actually, to be honest, the Switcher ads are generally funny and they're effective. Yeah. The problem is they cross the line sometimes, and that's what I don't like.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that they're not. They're certainly not truthful in many of them.
And that's my thing.
But a little. You know? But you know, that's the thing about humor. That's why humor is effective, because you can say something like that that's a little over the top, and it doesn't come across as churlish or bombastic or
so if you make a joke, it's okay to lie? Is that
no
in an ad for a product?
Well, it's an ad. Look, all ads are somewhat disingenuous. I'm not I'm not saying that. No, and I wasn't commenting on what Microsoft's veracity of that press release. I think it probably was accurate. It was more that it wasn't the best way to deliver that message. Let's put it that way. That's all. That's my only point.
Who knows?
Let's move on. I don't want to bore people.
Well, I would just say, I think what they did was they sent it out to people in the press. And they said, if you want to talk about it, talk about it, let us know.
Right.
And I declined to talk about it. I did not talk to them. I just took the information they had. And I wrote something based on my own experiences and perspective.
Which is probably what they hoped.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
That's the best result, right? You send out the mailer and you hope that the press picks up on the points and re-delivers them in an appropriate way.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, what some people in the press did from Microsoft's point of view, unfortunately, is they just spit the press release out and said, look at this. And that's not, not the intent.
But they had to know. I mean, they know what they're dealing with now. Come on. Oh, yeah. This is what they get.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not the beloved grandmother here.
They should start a news channel like Fox. Oh, wait a minute. They have MSNBC. Never mind.
Well, I wouldn't say they have MSNBC.
They'd love to get out of MSNBC at this point.
They have that money toilet that they I don't know what they do with it. You know, people in the future will wonder what is this, multiple sclerosis? What does this stand for? I mean, no one even associates that with Microsoft. It's not like they're, Steve Ballmer's pulling the little puppet strings on the newscasters. You
know? No, I'm afraid not. It used to be, when we first started the site there, the reason that we did the site was NBC felt like, because of Microsoft's partnership, they really needed to have technology coverage.
Yep.
They gave up on that in about 18 months.
Which is too bad. I used to love that show.
Well, you know what happened is Princess Diana died. So they put us on hiatus while they went wall to wall with, tabloid coverage. And the ratings soared, and they said, oh, see ya. And then we never went back because they said, oh, this is what we should be doing.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Hey, I'm used to it. That's what happens to technology coverage in mainstream media. It is always the redheaded stepchild. So you said an interesting thing on your Twitter. You were talking about Windows 7.
Yep.
It ain't Windows 7, is it? But that's the name now. That's the official name.
It's the name. It's official, which I think, by the way, I think it's a great name.
It is. Actually, I like it.
I think the mistake that, this is so typical of Microsoft. I can come up with a million of these examples. Windows 7, they're going to ship it as, the version will be 6.1. only
name Microsoft. It 7. It doesn't matter.
Can't you just change the version?
Doesn't matter.
They drive me crazy.
Well, no, we're engineers, and in fact, it is 6.1, and you should know.
But I swear to God, how hard would it be to intercept OS calls, that look for the version of the OS for compatibility purposes, and just say report yourself as 6.1 in this case, just so you ensure that compatibility works, right? Because the reason I think
that's what's going on.
Yeah. But this is typical Microsoft, isn't it? Windows 7. Okay, so whatever. So the version's different. Classic Microsoft. But it's not the 7th version either. And that's what they said. They said, we're calling it Windows 7 because it is the 7th version of Windows. And then every 2-bit blogger on the planet sat down in front of their computers and researched this and said, actually, depending on how you count it, it's either the 29th or the 7th, 17th version, or it's not even close to 7.
How can we get to 7? Windows 1, there was no Windows 2, right? Windows 3.
Listen, you can't do it. You've already missed some. Because, no, I'm serious. There were, between Windows 2 and 3, there were actually multiple versions. Uh-huh. There were Windows 2 point whatever for 286, for 386. There was Windows 3, 3.1, 3.1.1, Windows for Workgroups 3.1 and 3.1.1. Windows 95 was version 4. There was a Windows 95 OS.
I got it. I figured it out. Two. I figured out how it could be Windows 7.
Yeah.
You don't count all those. Okay. Windows 1, Windows 3. No dots, just 3, 3.1, all that, 3.1.1. So Windows 1, Windows 3, Windows 98. You don't count SE, ME, or SE or anything.
Well, you got to count 95, ME, you mean.
I mean 95. Okay, Windows 1, 3, 95, 98, ME, XP.
No. What about NT?
No. Vista. Wait a minute, it's 8.
It's not 7. Listen, it doesn't matter how you count. It's never 7.
Seven.
In fact, they should say Windows 7 is like what do you call those names where it's like GNU is not Unix or something? You know, it's sort
it's
of like
a, one of the recursive acronyms. Windows
it's recursive.
Is not Windows.
It's like Windows 7
is not Windows.
We're calling
7.
It Windows 7 because it's not 7. It's Windows.
You can't
it's
get
not
to 7.
7.
Wait a minute. I thought I had it for sure, but I left out.
You can't do it. You can't do
if
it.
If you just counted the consumer
this
versions.
Is, listen, this is the company that made the first version of NT, and they called it Windows NT 3.1. The first version. Right? And by the way, let's talk about how stupid this is. Windows is a product line that has had three different types of names. They've had version numbers, mm-hmm. like 3.0, 3.1. Mm-hmm. They've had year names, like 95, 98, mm-hmm. 2000. And then they've had what Microsoft calls aspirational names, like XP and Vista.
Me. Vista.
And now they have a number that means
we're back
nothing.
To numbers.
So this is no, we're not back to anything. This is new. This
we've
number
never done
means
just
nothing.
A number.
Because this number
it's not
doesn't
a version.
Apply to the version. It's 7. It's not 7.0.
7's a nice number. It's lucky.
It is a nice number.
8's lucky in China, though. So they could. Okay. They should call it 8 in China and 7 in
hey,
in the
they've
US.
Already mucked it up so much they should call it a different number in every country. In fact, they should call it the region code on DVDs. You know,
Windows Region 1.
It's so stupid. They're so stupid. Well,
That's because you know too much. If you take everything away from like any knowledge, yep. Windows 7 sounds good.
It sounds great. People will think it is the 7th version.
Yeah.
That's
so what
they'll look
cares?
At that and say, it's version 7.
Who cares? What does Fair it matter enough. What they think? It is a little weird when they see it report itself as Windows 6.1. I think that's a little confusing.
I know. I don't even know
where they get 6.1 from.
They do this stuff all the time. You know, the switch over to the true 32-bit computing occurred not in Windows 95, as most people believe, but in Windows for Workgroups 3.11.
Right. Right.
What the heck is that? And in Windows XP, which to date has got to be the best-selling version ever, and a major upgrade by any stretch of the imagination, version 5.1. You know, I mean, they're so crazy. I just this stuff drives me nuts. This is Microsoft. This is the world I live in. This is why I scream in my room like a guy with Tourette's.
It's not seven. Well, but it's the marketing department that determines these names, right? I mean, it's not the engineers.
Oh, sure. Of course it is. Yeah.
So the marketing department, I think, probably said, see, the number 7, we can make a nice logo and you can have a smiling face and the sun rising over the top. I mean, I'm sure that's what they're thinking about. They're not.
These are the people that took away the NT name and called Windows NT5 Windows 2000.
You know, they learned, by the way, that the year is a bad idea.
But they.
Because if
but
you can't
only
get it
for
out
Windows.
That year.
No, but Windows Server uses year names. Office has used year names.
That's true.
Office Server products, Exchange
Office
2007.
Is doing it right now, yeah.
System Center uses year names. Right. This company is as discombobulated as you could possibly be. They need to rein it in.
So
it's getting stupid.
It's interesting because you really what we're seeing is opposite ends of the scale. We were talking earlier about Apple and its monolithic. You know, focus.
Yep.
And that's the kind of thing Steve Jobs would also go crazy about.
Absolutely.
And then Microsoft's kind of the other end of the scale where it's kind of like, woo, whatever. We'll just, woo.
Well, but you know, this stupidity has real world ramifications. It really does. I get email all the time from people who say, I've just upgraded to Windows Vista,
mm-hmm.
but I have Office XP.
Right.
I understand
Can
that.
I run it? Yeah,
that only works with Windows XP.
Yeah, I get that all the time.
No, actually, it doesn't. But see how stupid that is. Or in the year name is the same stuff, right? I have Office 2003. Will that run on Windows?
Right.
You know, 2000 or something.
Right.
I mean, is it too old now?
Yeah,
you can't really draw any judgment based on that information. You have to go and look at what the system requirements are and so forth. They have no relationship to each other whatsoever.
Well, let's say Redmond called and they said, look, Ballmer's out. We want you to run the company, Paul. And
yeah.
You are an absolute emperor. You are the Steve Jobs of Windows.
Yep.
What would you like to name him?
Hmm.
Would you like
I don't think
mountains?
No, I don't
bars,
think.
Bars? Strippers?
Yeah, sure.
Whatever. I don't know.
Strippers. No, I yeah.
Windows
I want strippers.
Trixie. So it's Windows like Trixie.
Everything would be Hurricane something. No, I don't think it matters what the details are. I would just want it to be consistent. You know, consistency
nice.
Takes many forms. You know, why does Microsoft have 32 different applications that edit photos? You know, why do they have, why are there two different registry editors in one version of Windows? You know, why, there's all kinds of things like that. I mean, I would like, I think the biggest thing is consistency. And by the way, for all the negative stuff about Steve Jobs, that is one thing that he's been, well, actually, I don't know if he, I don't even know if I could credit him for consistency, but there is something to be said for a single vision that sort feels like it permeates across the entire line of products that you make.
Precisely.
Apple's a smaller, they're a smaller company. They don't do as much stuff. Microsoft is all over the map. You know, it is, it's a mess. But yeah, I think my, the biggest thing I would want to do is rein it in.
Just figure out something and stick with it.
Figure out something, you know. It's weird. You know, Windows Live, the Windows Live apps that just came out, I noticed in some of the About dialog boxes, they actually refer to themselves as something like Windows Photo Gallery, Windows Live Photo Gallery 2009. Oh, jeez. Really?
You know, really? You know, in the programming side, Charles Simonyi is very famous for having told the programmers at Microsoft, look, this is how variable names are going to be.
Yes.
So that everybody uses the same nomenclature, so that we know what functions and variables, we know what that function and variable does. And it's really a great notation system. It, of course, it's absolutely necessary in programming. Well, I guess it's not, but it certainly makes a big difference.
I think it's actually fallen by the wayside a little bit, because you remember when he was an active programmer at Microsoft, the languages were limited. You had small names you could use, and you know, I think the modern managed code languages we have, you know, you tend to use these variable names that are very drawn out.
You can make them longer, but it'd be nice to have a consistent way of doing it, so that you could almost generate the name from looking at
consistency is always appreciated.
In programming, it's vital, especially if you have big teams. But that's the problem. You see, Microsoft's big. It's huge. It's diverse. It's hard to make a monolithic policy for naming, I guess. So PDC is coming up. That's where Windows 7 is going to get its big debut. Is that next week?
Soon. It is a week from Sunday.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I am excited. I mean, I'm stressed a little bit. I've got so much to do before then, but
you're
going to
be
a busy
week. Blogging. Ed Bott's going to be blogging. Mary Jo Foley.
Well, yeah. So what this is we have a group of people. Long Zen from IveStartedSomething.com got a bunch of first-rate bloggers together and asked us if we would do live blogging together. We're only going to, you know, I think in some ways, unfortunately, we're almost doing it the wrong way. So we're going to live blog in the same place. It will be on all of our sites, but only during the keynote events. And I kind of went back, and I should tell you first, it's Ed Bott and Mary Jo Foley from ZD, Kip Nisterin from Liveside.net, Rafael Rivera from Within Windows, myself, Tom Warren from Neowin.net, and Long Zen. And so we'll be live blogging together during the keynotes. Now,
all-star lineup, that's great.
Yeah, and that's nice. But I kind of went back and said, well, that's good, but you know, here we are. We're all going to be at the same exact event, blogging about exactly the same thing at the same time. We're going to be stepping all over each other's toes.
Right.
I said, I think the thing that would be more interesting in a way would be to keep this thing going during the entire event, because we'll all, after the keynotes are over, we'll go off on our own things. We'll have our own meetings, our own sessions that we attend, our own tidbits that we uncover. And that would make it much more valuable if we could contribute that stuff to the live blog. But that was met with the sound of crickets. I don't know if everyone was afraid of, people would stay at one other guy's site or whatever it was.
Right.
No one else. I don't think anyone even wrote back to that. So I tried. So I'll be doing my own stuff. I mean, obviously, I'll be there for most of the week. And, I'll be blogging. There'll be photo galleries and all kinds of stuff. Whatever happens, I'll be writing about it. So this will just be part of it. But it's kind of cool. So we can get together and I don't know what you call it, co-opetition or...
Do you think there'll be as much media attention to PDC as there was even to this Mac notebook announcement?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. This is huge. Yeah. All right, good. Yeah.
Now, PDC is always a big event, and this one is shaping up to be a huge deal.
We're going to do a special twit the Sunday after, which would be then, I guess, 2 weeks from Sunday. With you, Jerry Pournelle. In fact, if you want to invite Raphael or anybody else to join us, that'd be great.
Oh, sure, he would love to be on there.
Yeah,
sir.
Let's get him on. And we'll devote the entire twit.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, Steve Jobs blows his nose or something.
Yes, unless. Right. They've released the 17-inch version of the Mac Pro So we've decided to.
I'm sorry, we're going to interrupt our PDC instead. Coverage for.
But Leo, it's just a 17-inch version of the same thing. I know, but we have to dedicate 2 hours to it.
I didn't do any special cover. Well, I guess we did a little special coverage, but not nearly to the degree we're going to do at PDC. Sorry, PDC wall to wall coverage.
Okay. All right.
I promise.
Okay.
Don't feel bad. I'm not going to leave you behind.
I'm not worried.
Let's see what else. Before we get to our picks of the week, and you want to talk a little bit about Hyper-V. I want to talk about your massive setup, your big fat setup that you're doing. But before we do that, I want to talk about GoToMyPC. You know, we've talked about this before. I'm a big fan. I've been using GoToMyPC for 4 or 5 years now to remote access my system from anywhere. That's the beauty of GoToMyPC. GoToMyPC from the folks at Citrix is the easiest remote access to use, the easiest remote access to install. And the reason is, and there's a lot of reasons. These guys really understand Windows. They really understand remote access. They use I don't want to get too crazy here technically, but they use an intermediate servers that you log into and the remote computer logs into. And that's how they avoid firewall issues, routing issues. It just works. Very simple to install. In fact, you could do it right now. You could do it before this ad is over. Go to gotomypc.com. In fact, if you're going to go there, go to gotomypc.com/windows and sign up for that 30-day free trial. A couple of clicks of the mouse. I think it's ActiveX. I'm not sure. Or maybe it's Java. It installs right away. Now, it's on your system. And anywhere you go with any laptop, you can even use a Mac laptop, as long as you can surf the net. You go to gotomypc.com. You have a secure username and login. It's 128-bit encrypted, so you could use it at an internet hotspot anywhere. And now you have complete access to your Office PC. You could surf. You could send and receive email. You can run any program. You can access any network resource. You can drag and drop files from one computer to the other. I mean, it is amazing. The latest version, I think it's version 9, is the fastest they've ever done. It is incredible. Whether you want to work at home, work on the road, or just be able to access your PC in an emergency, GoToMyPC. It's the way to go. PC World's world-class award for best remote access software. It's that simple. GoToMyPC.com/windows. You want to try the best for free for the next 30 days, unlimited, 30 days, unlimited use. Go to GoToMyPC.com/windows. And we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. So just to recap, for those of you who haven't been listening every week, Paul has bought this behemoth machine.
Well,
it's a quad core, right? Or is it eight?
No, it's a quad core. I mean, but this is like any other PC purchase, right? It's out. It's not the best.
Already disillusioned.
I look at this thing and I think I'd love to use this as my PC. That's the biggest problem. You know, it's quiet. It's fast. Yeah.
Is it how much RAM?
8 gigs of RAM.
8 gigs? Wow.
Yeah.
Vista 64?
No. It's running Windows Server 2008 because I'm doing all that Hyper-V and virtualization stuff.
So you got Windows Server 2008 on it, and you've got the new Hyper-V. Now, last week we talked about all the problems you had getting that working. You did get it working.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, yeah, I did. And this is the weird part about being me is this. So we talked about this on the podcast, you know, and then I got an email from Wagner Edstrom, Microsoft's PR firm, and they said, yeah, we heard you on the podcast and we'd like to talk to you about this. And it always gives me this queasy feeling.
Yeah, I hate that.
You know, because one of the things
it's like the principal found out.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to talk to this guy. I don't want to, you know, I don't know if they, a guy I know very well over there, a good guy in the Windows Server team. And, you know, we could talk to you on Wednesday at this time and okay. And
yeah, it's like you know, called to the office. It really is.
And then you kind of sit there thinking, oh, geez, you know, this is great. And so I went back and looked because I wanted to be sure. I will say just as sort of a backgrounder, you know, I talk about this stuff here. I might have blogged about it or written about it somewhere else. And I get this feedback from people who say, well, Paul, you know, it's an enterprise product. You know, it's not supposed to work out of the box. I mean, that's, you know, there's like a...
no enterprise product works out like of the box.
It's like a certain barrier of entry here. And if you can't figure out, you probably shouldn't be running it, you know. Or why are you mentioning this on the podcast? I mean, people are going to think it's something they can run Windows Vista on top of or something. And it's like, oh, geez. You know, that stuff's a little alarming to me when people write me things like that. So I went back and looked again. I wanted to be sure. Microsoft does have some documentation for Hyper-V. You know, did I miss something? Maybe they spelled this out. And so I did talk to them yesterday, and I was actually, I don't want to say pleased, but somewhat pleased to discover that, in fact, you know, the issues I had are not documented by Microsoft in any official sense, and that they're working on that documentation now. And, you know, there was a bit of a disconnect, I think. Their take on it was this, and if you paid attention to what I was talking about last week, this will make sense to you. If you don't care about the stuff, then you can just zone out for 30 seconds. But the short version is this. It is, in fact, possible to install the free Hyper-V server, you know, on a machine like this and get it up and running remotely without doing any weird configuration, but you have to do it in a certain way. And if you don't do it that way, you have to go through all these configuration steps. And there's a guy, I think it's John Howard, who is a guy who works in the Windows Server team, who documented in a very detailed fashion. It's awful. I mean, what you have to do on the server and on the desktop, it's different. If you're running into a domain or not in a domain, there's all these different steps you have to take to make it work. Or you could just configure, you basically log onto the server for the first time. You set the local administrator to be a domain administrator account. And if you do that, everything just works.
Oh.
And I didn't do that. Oh. In fact, I tried this four
but
different ways.
That's not documented.
It's not documented, yeah. I know. So I'm going to write it up. I'm going to write it up. I'll do that.
They should just have a piece of paper in there that says, hey.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a free free download.
Do yourself a favor.
Well, then read
me first.
There's a lot of documentation that they've created. There is a, let me wait for it to come up here. There's something called the Hyper-V Planning and Deployment Guide. That is, how many pages? It's that word is running slowly here. I mean, it's pages and pages, and it goes on and on and on. And it talks about, you know, configuring a virtual network. Yeah, 30 pages long. It never mentions this information, you know. And it's a little, it's too bad. So anyway, they're working on that, and I'll write something. And I just said to them, look, it's fine. I mean, it's early in the game. I'm going through this, you know, so other people don't have, you know, make the same mistakes. It's fine. It's something I can write about, you know, I hope I didn't rant about it. I mean, it was just a little surprising to me how difficult it was, you know, to get it up and running. So anyway, there is an answer, and hopefully I'll have this in printed form, you know, in written form soon so people can see it.
Good.
But yeah.
All right. Yeah, I hate that feeling. Like, did I do something wrong? Oh, gosh. I pray I didn't miss something.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Best case scenario, you know, they come back and like, yeah, actually, you're right. It doesn't work. Well, it does work, but we just didn't tell you how.
We didn't tell you how. So, but that's good to know. So if you log in as the domain administrator.
Well, one of the things you can do. So Hyper-V itself, the free version, is very basic. It's a text screen. I think there are 8 options. You can set the date and time. You can log on to a domain if you want. You can open up remote access, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, but one of the other things you can do is create local administrators. So you can log on to the box. You can create a workgroup account if you want, but if you want it to work seamlessly from a remote, because you can't sit at that machine and install OSs on it in virtual machines. You have to do it remotely.
Oh, that's weird.
But it's when you go to the remote machine and you try to hit the box, that's what doesn't work.
I see.
And that's what you have to configure. But if your local machine, if your PC is logged onto a domain and you are a domain administrator, configure that account as the local administrator on that box and you're done. There's no configuration.
See, that's obvious.
Yeah,
you should have thought of
that. Hey, it's what some people might call intuitive.
In hindsight, it's intuitive.
It is like anything else. Once you know the answer, it's easy.
Yeah. Once you know how to do it, no problem.
Yeah.
All right, we got a tip of the week about Windows Aero. It's not what you think it is, and Norton has something for us as our software of the week that's coming up in just a little bit, but. Before we do that, Paul has a Windows pick or a pick of some kind for Audible. Audible.com/Windows. That's our favorite place to go to get audio books. I listen to them all the time, just finishing Neverwhere. And, you know, the fun thing about having a library of books, because I don't read as much. I don't drive like I used to. So I kind of get ahead on the books is now I have, you know, the excitement of going, oh, what should I listen to next? The problem is doing these shows, I get more recommendations than I can listen to. So now
I'm having a hard time keeping up. In fact, I'm still not done with the Bob Woodward one. Although I have to say that's one of the best ones
I know. I've read in a long. It's on my list. I can't wait to read it.
I'm having a really hard time getting into the Neal Stephenson book, which I find alarming because I think the guy is getting more and more out there every book.
It's abstruse, but give it 350 pages. I don't know how long that is on the listening.
Yeah,
I feel like he's
leaving me behind.
I felt the same way reading it, and then things start to click, and you start to understand it, and it's worth it. And I didn't listen to it because I only had a reader's copy, so I'm not sure what the experience is listening to it. But now I'm going to go back and listen to the Quicksilver trilogy because they now have that. I mean, the Baroque Cycle, they now have that on Audible.
I should get the third part of that because I finished the first one completely.
I'm impressed. I got stalled even in the first one,
which I think was Quicksilver was the name of the first one, if I remember.
That's right.
The second one I got through. I mean, maybe 70%. And the third one, I think I read the first two chapters. Yeah, it was so much.
It bogged down. But I think listening, I might be able to do it better. We'll see. What is your... So anyway, these are all things you can get. Audible.com/windows. 51,000 titles. Download it. Play it on your Zune, your iPod, your computer. You could burn it to CD. People put them on the GPS devices now because a lot of these guys, the little GPS devices for your car have little memory card slots. So you can put Audible books on there.
Yep.
Many, many different devices. There's a device compatibility list. They do have to be compatible with Audible. So there's a list on the Audible website. I think 135 devices last time I counted. So what should we listen to? Not that we need more, but what should we listen to this week?
Well, that's the thing. So I don't really have anything new, but what I noticed on there was that they have for free the 2008 presidential debates, the three of them.
Oh, that's great. I tell you, I listened on the radio last night. It's a very different experience listening.
It is. You don't get to see the awkward John McCain stuff, which I found very humorous
The fluttering eyes and the grimaces. No, I had to go back to YouTube.
Well, no, did you see him at the end when he wanted to come over and shake the guy's hand, and he was kind of dodging either way, and he did that kind of awkward grandpa.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah, see, but on the other hand, you get to focus on the content.
The content, which involves a lot of very negative attacks. But if you're into that kind of stuff. This is obviously an important election. I think it's something people need to pay attention to, and whichever side you may fall on.
This is something Audible has done. I remember them doing it in 2004. I wasn't a member in 2000, but they've been doing it all along.
The first time I had heard Obama speak was the...
That's right. That speech is on here, yeah.
That was the one I actually had listened. I'd never heard of the guy, I think like most Americans, really. And I actually heard that, and I burned it to CD for my wife. I said, you got to listen to this. This is crazy.
Yeah. Great. He's a great speech maker.
Yeah.
He really is.
Yeah.
So the debates are on and they are free. Now, I'm thinking you have to be an Audible member to get them, but I'm not sure. So I'll tell you what, make it simple on yourself. Go to audible.com/windows and join. You can get this and a free book and, download a ton of free content. And then if you decide not to stick around, no problem. It all continues to work just fine and you can listen to it at your leisure. But I think you are going to want to stick around because this is such a great way to get more done. Audible.com in less time /windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Yeah, I was driving around town during the debate last night because it was October 15th and I had to get my taxes mailed. I was searching for a post office that wasn't closed yet. See, everybody else does this. Everybody else does this in April. But I decided I want to do it in October.
Yes.
Man.
So, well, you're probably in the same boat I am, which is people complain about taxes, but when you're self-employed, you pay.
Oh, it's very more complicated.
Taxes.
Yeah.
You pay more taxes than anybody. And
you bet.
It's horrific. Yeah, you pay quarterly. And
you also pay more because of the Social Security stuff. normally, your employer pays half of that. You don't get that benefit. You pay it all. So
we pay for health insurance.
But at least that's deductible. Thank goodness.
It's the dream, though,
Someday, I'm going to work for myself and pay through the house.
It's the dream, Leo.
There are different types of people. Some people like having an employer with a health plan, a 401k. And I loved that. But I also, I bet you're like this, too, have an intense drive not to be told what to do. And so,
I'm completely ruined for normal workplace work, right? To the point where, seriously, I've been working at home since, 93, 94.
You've never had to do this.
I went out to, Israel years ago for a work-related thing. Looking good, by the way.
Thank you.
And
Halloween is coming. I just wanted to tell you that.
And, you know, I've lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
So we no, it's okay.
I put in my bad. I took my dental work out, and it's not a, it's not an attractive thing.
Stop looking at the video. So, you know, I went into the office the first day that they had there, and a long, long day.
Yeah.
And then the next day I was in bed and the phone rang and it was someone from the company. And they said, you know, where are you? And I said, what do you mean I'm in bed? They said, well, you're supposed to be here. And I said, what are you talking about? I came in there yesterday. You know, wait, I go in every day. I
mean, every day? You know, you're kidding.
I would be useless. I mean, I would just be useless.
Yeah. No.
I don't know why. Why are we talking about this? I don't even
I'm just saying because the tax.
Oh, that's right.
Taxes,
yeah.
And you know, and then there's the quarterlies. But this was my my 2007 taxes that I had. You know, you could defer them. You can you pay what you owe, and then, but don't file till October. And I had to do that because of all the Canadian income. The Canadians are in a different tax calendar, so I won't have to do that anymore. Thank goodness.
Well, if you owe money to anybody, the IRS is the people you can always pay last. Just give them a little something, and they can keep.
They shut up.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, they're wonderful people.
They're happy to get anything. Really.
Hope they're listening because I love them. So
no, you know what? I finally broke down and got a CPA and a bookkeeper, and the bookkeeper comes in like twice a month.
Yep.
And, I mean, I can't keep track of this stuff. This is it. That's what's sad is it's so complicated that a normal human can't really do it anymore.
Oh,
you have to have professionals to do this stuff. That's crazy.
Sure.
Crazy talk. All right, let's get your tip of the week. That was a good Audible pick, actually. I'm downloading them right now. What do you got for us for a Vista tip?
So my tip involves one of the big misconceptions about Windows Vista, and that involves the Aero user interface. I remember when, you know, Windows Vista was coming out, a lot of the hubbub was that, you know, you got to make sure you can run Aero, and, you know, you have to worry about what kind of system you have, and your video card has to be able to do this and that and the other thing. And there was a lot of fear that, you know, people weren't going to be able to run this thing. And as it turns out, Aero runs fine on just about anything. But one of the things that's been a big misconception since that time is that you'll actually get some sort of performance improvement if you turn Aero off. And that's actually only true if we're using a system that has integrated graphics or a really old system that has a limited amount of RAM such that it's, you know, paging things and so forth. And that's because Aero uses the GPU, not the CPU. So it actually takes a load off of the processor that's doing everything else in your system. And in effect, speeds the performance of your system, but more importantly, dramatically improves the reliability of the system. And that for most people on a modern PC, you know, turning Aero off would actually introduce more problems than it would advantages.
And, I do have to say, though, there are a lot of people with motherboard graphics.
If you are, you're right. So if you're running, but that's always the exception. Nothing is absolute. You know, we talked about X64 last week, and of course, I got a lot of email from people saying, well, yeah, but this very specific application doesn't run properly, or it has some issues in X64 versions of Vista. Yeah, I don't mean 100% of the time. I'm just saying in general, you know, X64 is that should be the next version that you get. X64 on a new PC. Now, I don't mean upgrade now. I don't mean, you know, go out and buy the thing. I mean, the next time you buy a new PC. This is also the same sort of thing. It's not going to be true across the board. But for most people, if you have a dedicated video card, you know, I would say on the MacBook I have that has integrated graphics, you know, turning off Aero actually does speed up the system. But that's because that thing has, you know, a minimal, not as much RAM as it should have. And it has integrated graphics. So the graphics are eating into the system RAM as well. You know, so if you have a system with dedicated graphics, leave Aero on. I mean, you can turn off the transparency effects it just for sort of a visual thing if you want. But, I mean, the reliability and the performance of Aero are excellent on a system that has dedicated graphics. There's no reason to turn it off. In fact, you'd probably be getting the opposite of what you thought.
Now, what's the reason to use it? I mean, is it more than eye candy?
Well, I mean, from like a productivity standpoint or just from a...
Well, it just looks good. I mean, I'm just asking, is there anything besides the fact that it looks... I mean, it does look good. I'm not denying that, but
it's
all
more reliable. You know, so
now,
the
that's
other
what I'm interested in. You said it may not work as well without it. Why is it more reliable?
Right. Because It is, well, first of all, it's running within the context of the GPU. So it's using the GPU power to, you know, to drive the display.
Right.
It's not sharing resources with the CPU, but it's using a different rendering, screen rendering technology than all of the other graphic modes that are possible in Vista. And those are the modes where you kind of move the windows around and you can see some tearing and, you know, get the, that sort of stuff. Aero doesn't have that problem. It's a more reliable, a better looking graphics display. It's not just eye candy. It's not just transparency and glass windows and that stuff. It's actually a superior rendering mode than what's available on older versions of Windows and also on Vista if you're not using it.
Okay. So turn it on. Leave it on. And
leave
if
it
you
on.
Have motherboard graphics, integrated graphics, as a lot of less expensive machines do and most laptops, it's your choice. I mean, it works on even stuff as low as
test it both ways. I've found on the MacBook especially, it runs much better when Aero's off.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, in emulation, I think that's probably a good idea. Although these new MacBooks now have the dual, they have integrated graphics and they have a separate graphics chip, which I've noticed makes a huge difference.
No doubt.
The 9800. Yeah. I don't know, though. At boot camp, it should work, but Aero would work, but I don't know. If VMware Parallels would be able to do Aero yet. I'll have to try that.
No, they can't. They can't.
They still can't. Okay.
They're getting there. I wouldn't be surprised if VMware was able to turn that on at some point.
They now have 3D chip support, you know? I'll try it. No, I have the latest
VMware
Aero.
Sorry, go ahead.
I generally don't run Vista in emulation just because I find XP is a little faster. But now on this newer machine, I might try. I'll put a Vista on it and see what happens. See what transpires. I'll give you a report next week.
There you go.
Okay. That's our Vista tip of the week. You might find lots more in that fabulous book. Wiley & Sons publishes it. It's called Windows Vista Secrets by Paul Thurrott. And now for our software tip of the week. And this is kind of an interesting program.
Yeah, this one's shocking to me on two different levels. You know, one, it's called Norton. I think it's called Norton UAC or Norton user account control. It's a replacement for the Vista user account control, right? The most reviled feature of Windows Vista. And the reason it's shocking is, A, I can't stand Norton products. I can't.
I agree. I'm with you on that. I hate them, yeah. They slow your thing system down, and they're not so effective, and they can cause all sorts of compatibility issues.
Yes, and B, I mean, I'm probably one of the few people around who have said, you know, user account control is annoying, but
you know, over time,
it works, and over time, it's not as bad. But there are two applications that I run fairly often. There's one, Visual Studio is one I run every single day. And for whatever reason, if you're hitting a website that's on the local machine, you have to run Visual Studio in administrator mode. That means I get a user account control prompt every single time I run it. So it's one of those things that doesn't go away over time. And the other one is Handbrake. And Handbrake also, you want to run that under an administrator account. So you have to get that UAC prompt when you launch that application. So these are two applications that are running on one of my systems fairly regularly. And I always have to deal with user account control. So one of the things that the Norton thing does when it replaces user account control is it gives you a checkbox to say, always approve this one application.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how it does it. It doesn't trigger something in Security Center. You know, one of the big problems with user account control is if you try to turn it off, you get all these warnings all over the place,
right,
unless you tell Security Center to just be quiet. And this somehow replaces it. It doesn't trigger anything. It is a different screen that comes up. You can tell it's something a little different. It's still got that secure desktop effect, you know, where everything else is faded out and there's a little window in the middle that you have to deal with. But
so you still have UAC. It's just a less annoying UAC?
It's a different looking and a less annoying UAC, yeah.
This looks good. And is it free?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the deal is with it, you know, if it will always be free or if this is just some sort of, you know, pre-release version. You know, I don't know, but I have to say I actually really like it.
So it says the goal of this tool is eventually to build a whitelist as well as a blacklist database on various administrative actions so that you don't have to keep getting prompted. It remembers. But UAC does that, but I guess it'll do a better job of it.
That's really interesting to me because, you know, Microsoft is working on similar things, not for UAC, but for some of their server products. And I feel like with some of the automated responses you can do with their management products that over time you'll learn to trust it. Plus, they can get this database going of, you know, actions that people tend to trust, and they can put them into a different category. So that kind of effort is valuable. I think that's interesting. And it you know, taking the user account control theory to the next level. So
they say, and I think this is really true, we decided to write this tool after we noticed two alarming trends with UAC. The first is that people get so, you know, peeved with it, they just disable it, which of course makes you much more vulnerable. The second is that users get so used to it, they just go, okay. They don't read it. And I think that's absolutely true. That's really the flaw in UAC in general is, and I say this has been the flaw too with firewalls, which work much the same way, is that, you know, you get this fatigue sets in and pretty soon you just ignore any recommendation. You just say, yeah, let it through. I don't care. Allow it. So I was wondering, you know, admirable.
Reminds me of the middle light on the back of cars. You know, back in 1986, they added this third brake light.
Right.
And I always wondered, you know, this will work for a little while, but eventually we'll just get used to the third light and then they'll have to add a fourth light.
That's
and a fifth,
exactly
and a sixth,
what the, and, it's interesting that you had that instinct because that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It didn't, you know, the initially it really improved.
At first it was shocking because you'd see that extra light and be like, whoa, what the heck is that? But then a couple of years down the road, everyone has a car like that. And
somebody told me, I'm not sure I should look it up, but the statistics are, in fact, that accidents are back up again.
Are they?
Yeah, that the benefit of it is short term. It just goes away.
That's good stuff.
We're very good. Human mind is very good at tuning stuff out that's repetitive, you know? That's one of the things we're designed to do. If it's not a threat, okay, I'm going to move on.
Like those switcher ads.
So I think this is a good idea. I guess my question is, if Norton could do this, if Symantec could do it, so could Microsoft. Do you think they'll take a page from this book?
Well, we talked about how they're going to change UAC in Windows 7 a little bit. You know, I kind of joked about the, you know, the scale they have from really annoying to not so annoying, that kind of thing. So, I mean, they are working on it. I don't know where that's going to go, but
I like the database idea. I think that's one good solution, which is to start to figure out what's dangerous, what's not dangerous, and then, you know, I'll add a little intelligence, I guess, to UAC.
Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of community type stuff going on in the security industry. It reminds me of the company that, I just forgot the name of it. The guys that became Windows Defender antivirus or anti-spyware. Giant anti-spyware.
Right.
You know, they had that kind of thing going as well, a community of users that, you know, they kind of got together and they would basically create these white and black lists based on usage scenarios. It always seemed like a good idea to me. So,
yeah, the fact that's been very effective in spam fighting. That's how Gmail works, is kind of collaborative spam filtering.
As much as I hate to compliment Norton.
I got one of those calls from Symantec last year saying, oh, Leo, we'd like to set up an appointment to...
yes, that'll be my next call.
To re-educate you on your...
Paul, you're going to be busy on Friday. We're going to need about half the day.
But to their credit, they said, you know, we understand. We know that, you know, we took some bad turns with Norton antivirus, and it really was a pig. But we'd like you to, you know, give 2008 a try because we really think 2008 has gotten much, much better.
Okay.
I don't know. Have you tried it? I can't bring myself to try it. It's like...
It's like going back to someone who beats you. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
You know, it's exactly it.
We've changed and we want you back.
It's exactly it.
You know, give me a break.
I'll never hit you again.
Exactly. He's a biter.
I don't know. Are you talking about Marv Albert? What is that? What is that? Paul, a real pleasure talking to you today. As always, I want to invite people to go to the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And by the way, don't forget to go to that special page Paul has set up, winsupersite.com/giveaway. I'm sorry.
Slash book.
I screwed it up.
It's okay.
Slash book. Don't go to /book.
Don't go to /giveaway. God knows what the 401 errors on the site look like. Based on my experience, they're probably not very descriptive.
All right. winsupersite.com/book. And he'll give you the details on Saturday about what you should do on Sunday to win a copy of his new book, which is Windows Vista Secrets, second edition from Wiley & Sons. Well, great to talk to you. Have a great week. Get ready for your pack. You'll be packing next time we talk for PDC. It's exciting.
Yep.
We'll get a PDC preview and more next week on Windows Weekly. See you later.
See you later.